Welcome back to the Athletic Baseball Show for Thursday, June 1st. This is On Deck. I'm Stephen Nesbitt. I'm here with Levi Weaver, who writes the Athletic's daily baseball newsletter, The Windup, with Ken Rosenthal. Levi, how you doing?
I'm good, Stephen. On today's show, we're going to talk about the May breakouts that we believe in. We're going to preview our top series of the weekend. We will, of course, check in on our arms race and homer chase competitions, and Stephen is going to share a latent childhood memory involving a horse, a game of billiards, and a love lost. Can't wait. Cannot wait.
The first part, I was like, oh, I got a horse story.
So many horse stories. My dad was a professional rodeo cowboy. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know that. We were just talking about your experience living in England and having how Mother's Day was on a different day. So, wow, we have a lot to catch up on Levi's life. But bigger news here. June is upon us. June 1st is here. So we're going to take a look at the completely normal state of affairs in the majors. I would describe what's happened so far as chalk, like chalky chalk. You know, the last place team in the AL East is a half game better than the best team in the AL Central. The Rays, Rangers, and Twins are your AL division leaders. The Cardinals are still in last place. The Padres are trying desperately to stay ahead of the Rockies. And the Marlins, 2.5 games better than your pennant-winning Phillies. So that's everything's fine. Everything is normal. And we're going to get into our May breakouts. Breakouts that happened this month or maybe started in April and really solidified in May that we are buying. So who's the first guy you're buying from the month of May?
I kind of took a look at the list, and frankly, there were a couple that were extremely boring. Like, I don't care that Aaron Judge is doing great in May. We kind of expected that. It's fun to watch Aaron Judge. Don't get me wrong. Love that. But when we're looking at a list like this, he doesn't exactly jump out as like, oh, holy crap, Aaron Judge is good. Can you believe that? Yordan Alvarez really breaking out. He's only been doing this for his entire career. The two that I went with were Yandy Diaz and Christopher Morel. Diaz coming into this season, 472 career games, had a pretty, you know, it's a good slash line. He's hitting .278 for his career, got a .411 slug, is it 782 OPS. Hey, that is a good player. He finished 20th in MVP voting last year. He's going to finish higher than that this year. He's hitting .320. His OPS is .1018. His career high is 14 home runs this year. He's got 12, and you know, obviously the biggest thing to look at when you go to his Baseball Savant page, everything else is almost exactly the same, right? He's hitting the ball exactly as hard. He's striking out a little bit more. That's not going to contribute to a better slash line. It's the launch angle. Last year, it was 7.7 degrees. This year, it's 9.3. He's getting the ball in the air. And what do you know? When you hit the ball hard and aim it just a little bit higher, it goes over the fence and you hit more home runs.
I was talking to somebody last year in the Rays organization, and they were basically like, listen, we believe so highly in Yandy Diaz. Got to get him to stop drilling holes in the ground, because his max exit velocity, average exit velocity, everything's perfect except just how he's hitting it, the direction he's hitting it. He's figured that out. And like you said, there are some MVP votes coming his way, because the way he has started is pretty remarkable.
So he's the one that I have picked that I think can sustain this. That seems like a sustainable change to me. The one that I think may regress a little bit, Christopher Morel, who has just come up and set the world ablaze when he first got up. He had a 741 OPS last year, had 16 home runs and 425 plate appearances. This year, his OPS is 1039, and he's got 9 home runs already and 74 plate appearances. And of course, all of this is when we're recording on Wednesday. Who knows what he's going to do on Wednesday night? And while we are talking about launch angle, I happen to look at Morel's as well. It is an absurd average of 17 degrees launch angle. I think I may have said percent earlier when I was talking about launch angle. I meant degrees. You knew what I meant, but I need to acknowledge that I knew what I meant. You know, I don't know that 17 degrees is sustainable to continue to do. He's got a 37.8% strikeout rate, which is pretty high. His XBA and X-Slug are both a little bit below, you know, what his numbers say. I mean, an X-Slug of 625 is still great. That's still very, very good X-Slug. I'm not saying that Morel is going to revert to being, you know, like the Jeff Kunkel of, there's your 1980s Texas Rangers reference of the day, of the Cubs, but I don't know that he's going to continue to perform at an all-star rate. Still, a very good breakout, and those are my two guys.
I was looking at Morel's, he's on my fantasy team, so I tend to desire good things for him, but I was looking at his baseball reference page, and they have the bottom line there, was the 162 game average, where you sort of dream upon, if a guy stayed healthy, played a full season, got a full season of reps, and plate appearances, what would he turn out? And he's got a 787 OPS with 31 homers and 14 steals. It's like, if that's real, That's awesome. That's he's going to continue to strike out at that rate because he struck out at every level. A great May for him, for a guy who wasn't even up in April after having a pretty decent last year. So the two guys I'm going with, the first one is Francisco Alvarez, catcher for the Mets, rookie, always projected high things for him, expected high things for a top prospect. He's batting 292, 363, 667, 1.030 OPS with seven homers in the month of May. This is a guy who is always expected to hit. He's doing it. He's doing it with a 10% barrel rate. Strikeout rate's okay. We'll see if that evens out or even improves at this point. But I think he's going to continue to get better and better as he gets adjusted to the majors. And the Mets are a team that has already asked much of their young rookies. And he is the one that seems really poised to continue to do damage early in his career, while Brett Beatty and some of the others are getting adjusted maybe a little bit slower.
And just single-handedly wrecked Gary Sanchez's ability to have a nice New York comeback story.
Which we all wanted for him.
Yeah, of course.
The other one, I would say Mitch Keller, but I've already written enough about him, so I need to move on. And you got your Rangers reference in. I just got my Pirates one in. So I'm going to go with Bryce Elder. You could say he wasn't a May breakout because he was breaking out in April, but I guess I started to believe it in May. 172 ERA in 36 innings in the month, 112 whip, just one homer. This might still be smoke and mirrors. I mean, on rates and barrels, they were talking the other day just about joking kind of how blue his StatCast page is. As we know, like the pinnacle of baseball analysis is the reds and blues of StatCast. He doesn't show well there. He's brutal in velocity, in spin, in extension, in average exit velo. Yet he's got a 192 ERA on the season, 116 whip across 11 starts, I believe it is. So something isn't getting captured there. We're missing something, or he is just a magician on the mound. But it's not just that he's picking on lowly opponents. You know, he just faced the A's and they ended up losing that game, but he pitched well. But, you know, he's pitched in the sixth inning in every start. He's faced the Astros, Orioles, Blue Jays, Mariners, Dodgers. His worst one, oddly, was against the Marlins. So that's the other guy I am buying after the month of May.
So our top series for this weekend, I took a look at the standings. And look, I'll admit, it was Memorial Day weekend. It was my daughter's birthday. I kind of checked out a little bit over the weekend. Looked back in at the standings and had to double check to see if I was actually right about this. The Atlanta Braves and the Arizona Diamondbacks, as of Wednesday afternoon, have the same record. I would have guessed they were at least 5, maybe 6, 7, 10 games apart. No, the Diamondbacks are better than I expected. The Braves have hit a skid lately, lost two in a row to the Oakland A's, which I didn't think was allowed. They got absolutely throttled by Paul Blackburn, J.P. Sears, and that mighty, mighty Oakland bullpen. What do you think? Is this a problem? I mean, usually a two-game skid is not a problem, but when it's to these A's, that'll raise some eyebrows.
Yeah, I think this series is going to be a good third of the way through the season barometer for both sides. So I'm in Phoenix right now working on a story, and I was at Chase Field Tuesday night where Zach Gallen shoved again. And the D-backs look great lately. So they are rolling offensively. Lourdes Gurriel has been great. Ketel Marte, people I think wrote off a little bit after a down stretch for him, has been great. Christian Walker, Corbin Carroll are being exactly who you would hope they'd be. And they just brought back Jake McCarthy from AAA. And I think they have what it takes in that rotation, plus what do they have coming in the prospect system to continue to be a force in the division behind Gallen, who is really one of the best and still probably most underrated pitchers, starting pitchers in the game. Merrill Kelly deserves a shout out as well. He's been good. So Diamondbacks in good shape right now, and they're hot. The Braves, on the other hand, lost 7 of the last 10, including these first two against the A's. I don't have any concerns, Levi, about their lineup. They're going to be all right. Look at the names that have been clicking all season, from Acuna to Murphy to Olson.
To Marcelo Zuna is back, I guess. He's on fire.
Resurgence from both Osuna and Austin Riley. I mean, once you get Michael Harris out of his sophomore slump here, they're going to be in good shape, but the pitching staff is worrying. You know, Max Fried and Kyle Wright both on the injured list. So now they're relying on Michael Soroka, Jared Schuster in the rotation. The bullpen's been taking on water consistently. There's a stat that we were looking at last week called wins lost, which is where a starting pitcher leaves a game when he's in position for a win and he loses it. The Braves lead all of baseball in wins lost by the bullpen 10 times this season. And I think Braves fans would tell you, yeah, that sounds about right. Not where you want to be. And they just actually called up 20-year-old prospect AJ Smith-Shawver to help bolster that bullpen and sort of plug one of the holes. So he has barely pitched in the minors, 110 innings, but he's in the majors. Welcome, kid. So that's sort of where the Braves are at.
My second series, I hate to be a front runner here. Get me my gold chain and my Lakers jersey, but I'm going with the Yankees and Dodgers. it's interesting, right? The Yankees are currently 34-23. The Dodgers 34-22. So, you know, the Dodgers sitting atop the NL West. I think it is sometimes easy for those teams in the AL East to get a little buried and go, oh, they're in third place, fourth place. Well, the Yankees basically have the same record as the Dodgers right now. And that was not quite as surprising to me as Braves Diamondbacks, but it's still a little surprising. The Yankees have Josh Donaldson coming back. Tommy Canley should be back for this series. Giancarlo Stanton is close. Jose Trevino is back. So this, you know, slew of injuries that they've had to deal with, and this is nowhere near, you know, them getting quite back to full strength. Rizzo's still not in action as of time of recording, but it is at least a step in the right direction. And, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting about the Yankees is that their bullpen, I mean, so many teams, so many good teams. You just mentioned the Braves, the Rays are in the same boat. The Rangers are in the same boat. There are others who their bullpen is a problem. And I think the trade deadline is going to be really interesting to see who's going to be, you know, the first team to give up like a mega actual prospect for Joe Kelly, right? Like that's probably going to happen this year. The Yankees, not really in that boat. Like Clay Holmes is a guy, his K per nine in May is well over 10. Michael King has a 180 ERA this month with a 10.8 K per nine. And who would have ever thought anything named Hamilton would succeed in New York, but he's got a 15.63 K per nine in just over six innings. You're welcome for that reference.
Ian Hamilton. Yeah.
Yeah. He needs more syllables in his first name. closer Ian Hamilton, maybe at some point we could get there. But their bullpen's been great and keeping them afloat. Meanwhile, the Dodgers, the pitchers, gosh, I don't want to go on here, but they have nine pitchers with a 5+ ERA in May. And yeah, yes, one of them is like Alex Vesia. But the others, Kershaw's 555, Syndergaard's 619, Phil Bickford, who gets a lot of innings out of the bullpen, 856. So their pitching is struggling. Max Muncy is struggling. It'll still be an interesting series. And of course, it's the Yankees-Dodgers, so we're all going to care regardless.
The series I'm going to spotlight this week is Baltimore against San Francisco. More than anything, I just want to talk about the Giants. They're on a roll. They've made us sort of start to take them seriously in a division that we sort of written off as a Padres Dodgers runaway here, and turns out the Padres aren't exactly in that position. The Giants 11-4 in their last 15 as of time of recording. Mitch Haniger, Michael Conforto, J.D. Davis all really coming on. Pat Bailey has been great among a group of young players that have brought up and have really clicked immediately. The rotation doesn't strike fear beyond Logan Webb, but it's working out with your Anthony DeSclafanis, your Alex Cobbs, your Alex Wood. Sean Manaea is now in the bullpen.
I think that largely depends, Stephen, on if you're a Giants fan. Whether it strikes fear. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have interrupted. That was a B-grade joke, and I interrupted for it. Carry on.
We're getting a boo.
Brian's booing us in the chat. Brian. I'm sorry. You know what? Why don't you just take that one from the top?
Yeah, I'm going to move on to the Orioles. I'm going to let that one stand. I'm still not sure what exactly to make of the Orioles. They're doing wonderfully so far this season, but it seems critical for them to still get rotation help. I just don't, you know, especially with Grayson Rodriguez getting sent back down and not thriving in the early going. They've held together better than expected with Kyle Gibson, Tyler Wells, Kyle Bradish, Dean Kramer, and their bullpen, like the Yankees, has been one of the very best in baseball, probably 1-2 actually, Yankees and Orioles. But yeah, we'll see what to make of them. Their team is going to be fascinating to watch at the deadline. Again, lineup has been great, but they do have Cedric Mullins out now with a groin strain. Levi, you know what time it is. It is game time here on deck. A little extra to catch up on here because we were off Monday for Memorial Day. We're going to begin with a homer chase where we each pick a new hitter each week to add to our cumulative homer total for the season. Well, my easy Pete Alonso pick has paid off. He hit three homers to your Rafael Devers 0, which brings our totals on the season to Steven 7, Levi 4 after our first month of play.
I was doing so well. I had a lead. I blew it. I'm the bullpen problem.
Well, good news for you, because we're getting to the place where you dominate here, which is the arms race competition. We pick one starting pitcher each weekend and pit their stats from start head-to-head with a little metric we like to call Game Score 2.0, and that's actually what it's called. You can find it on Fangraphs. And last week, you picked Framber Valdez against the A's. I took Shohei Ohtani against the Marlins because I had a hunch that strikeouts are the key to the heart of Game Score 2.0. And I got the strikeouts. Ohtani's line, 6 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, 1 earned, 3 walks, 10 Ks for a game score of 62. I will note that Game Score 2.0 does not differentiate between earned and unearned runs, so you can factor that in. Meanwhile, Framber Valdez does what Framber does against the A's. Came away with a pretty similar line. 6 innings, 4 hits, 2 fewer. 1 run, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. So half as many strikeouts. Do you have any hunch here on which way this one tilts?
I think you won. If you didn't win, I don't understand Game Score 2.0 at all.
I think I did as well, but the truth is you won again.
Dang it. What? This is like putting two coins into like a magic ball and it just spits one out and it goes, there's a reason for this one. But every time I don't know which one it is.
64 to 62. So it's actually pretty close. I gave a little hint that gives it away. The earned runs count as, unearned runs count as earned runs, essentially. They count the same. So that's -3 on the total. And then the other one is hits. Hits are -2 points, whereas strikeouts are +1. So the difference in 3 hits to 6 hits is actually much more substantial, or a little more substantial, than me getting 10 strikeouts to your 5. I'm going to have to keep plugging away at cracking this code here. But I looked at the original game score at 1.0, and they actually even closer, 62 to 61, Framber still wins. So even in the original equation formula, I lose. So the listeners surely have no clue what's going on here. But the good news is I have another chance for this weekend.
I feel like a child playing chess, and my style is just so chaotic that you're playing real chess, but my moves make no sense. And you're like, how am I supposed to even strategize against? He has no strategy. And it's just, I feel like I've confused you with my incompetence.
So for this weekend, I'm going to take first pick because I need a W.
Okay.
I'm down 3-0. I'm depending between two rookies for the Guardians here, and I'm going to go with Tanner Bibee. They face the Twins. I think anyone in that division is a fine start. I'm going to go against the Twins on Thursday. So by the time you hear this, he will be gearing up for that start. So I'm going to go Tanner Bibee. I'll check off the Guardians off my list.
You and I are sticking to the exact same series. I'm taking Joe Ryan versus the Guardians.
That's a great pick. The Guardians are a very easy target right now.
All the Twin starters are TBA. So there is an outside chance that you will win, you know, something to zero. I'm trying to extrapolate and figure out when Joe Ryan is pitching. So I don't know. We may actually be head to head on that. Who knows?
That might be my angle, is to try to get you to pick guys who don't end up starting. That's my in.
He had Tommy John surgery last month. Why did you choose him? Joe Ryan versus the pitiful Guardians offense.
All right. We'll see how it plays out for both of us. Time for us to hit the exits. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to producer Brian for keeping the show on the rails this week. You can find all our work all week long at theathletic.com. You can subscribe for $2 per month for the first year at theathletic.com/baseballshow. Sign up for The Windup, The Athletic's daily baseball newsletter with Levi and Ken Rosenthal, for absolutely free. Later in your feed, the 3-0 show DVR is back. Eno and Britt, they'll all be talking about why teams aren't more aggressive at this time of year and which moves they would make if they were calling shots in different front offices. Should be a great show. Give us a follow on Twitter. Levi is at 32EFIS. I'm Stephen J. Nesbitt. We'll be back in your ears on Monday with more of What's on Deck.
Horse, 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 horse.